Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. And we're joined this morning by Brad Taylor, who is out with a new Pike Logan thriller. It's called Operator Down, and it is available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Putnam. It's part of the Penguin Random House family. And Brad, starting right with the title here, Operator Down, does that have some sort of significance in the world of counterintelligence?
It's got significance in the world of special forces. This is the first book I've gone back to writing one book a year. I was doing two books a year, and I had a lot of time to think about this one, and I wanted to make it more personal than, chasing the bomb type thing. And so I also wanted to bring back Aaron and Shoshana, two characters, the fan favorites that are Israeli Mossad operatives. And so I made it a more personal with one of those guys.
You've got Aaron and Shoshana that are back here, and when you have a situation where somebody is, I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but somebody is snatched overseas. I know that was always a thing that my parents instilled in me when we would travel during the Cold War, and I think right, wrong, or indifferent, that was what they would tell us. You had that experience, right, where you were in custody in Africa, right?
Yeah, actually, it certainly informed the plot. I like to get on the ground and do on-the-ground research, and so I went to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and Israel. And I also went to Lesotho, which is where the majority of the book is. It's a microstate inside South Africa, its own country, like the Vatican type thing. And I went over there to do some research, and since it's about a coup in Lesotho, all my research was not touristy. And I was running around taking pictures of the Prime Minister's residence and Parliament and the TV stations and the police headquarters and that kind of stuff. And I went to the Special Forces base. It took me forever to find the place. And went to the front gate and was just quizzing the soldier at the front gate just because I was acting like, what kind of place is this, acting like a tourist. And I got rolled up by counterintelligence guys, and I got interrogated for about 6 hours. They accused me of being a spy, and I certainly looked like a spy. I mean, I had no good stuff on me. My camera was full of pictures that, one of the pictures of the Prime Minister's residence had a photo. Inside the picture was a sign saying, don't take pictures. And so everything in it was pretty grim.
Is this almost like you see on TV? They roll you up, throw you in a van, and take you to a clandestine location? Or how does that work just in real life?
Yeah, that's basically what happened, except it was a big SUV. It wasn't a van. They squeezed me between two giant guys and drove me onto the base, which actually worked out for the book because I couldn't get on the base otherwise. Drove me on the base, went to a facility that they'd hastily turned into a interrogation facility, and then they interrogated me.
Were you thinking, my God, I got to call the embassy?
Well, I would have thought that right off the bat. They accused me of spying for the embassy, and there's a lot of machinations that I learned about Lesotho going on between the military and the police and the U.S. embassy, and so I wanted to distance myself from the embassy at that point. But at about the six-hour mark, I was thinking, okay, I got to pull out the embassy card, and these guys aren't going to let me go. And then they let me go.
So how did you actually get out of there? Did you finally convince them you're a writer, this is what you're doing, or did you ever let them know the truth?
No, I did not want them to know I was a writer, because if they had Googled my bio, they'd already accused me of being a spy for the United States. If they'd seen my bio, which is all over my website, they would have solidified in their paranoid head that I was, in fact, a spy. So I just stuck with a tourist story. I'm a tourist, I'm a tourist, I'm a tourist. And I hadn't done anything overtly illegal. And the commander came in. They were all wearing civilian clothes. I'm not sure exactly who he was, but he apparently was the big man, because when he came in, everybody jumped to attention. And he sat down and gave me this long speech, and I realized at that point he's informing me of stuff he wants me to take back to the embassy and tell the ambassador. He's trying to use me as a conduit, and he really believes I'm a spy. And I thought to myself, he's giving me this speech, he's going to let me go. And he did.
So I assume you've crossed that location off your list now of ever traveling again, right?
No reason to go back to that place.
All right. Well, as you put this together, you got Pike Logan and Jennifer Cahill. They are, as their relationship has developed throughout your books, what have you learned about them just as you've listened to their dialogue come to you in your mind as far as they've grown together as partners?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because you want the characters to grow, which is probably the hardest thing to do because they can't be stagnant. They've got to go forward, but they can't go so far forward that the series reader doesn't recognize who they are. And so I struggled with that early on, and then I kind of just let it do it on its own. And as I'm writing the story, something will come up in my head, and I'm thinking, okay, I'll do this and do that. And they kind of grow just like every other human grows, because, when you do everyday life, everything you do during the day kind of influences who you are. And I learned to just not try to force it, just to let it happen.
I've read plenty of thrillers over the years where I'll read dialogue, and I think that doesn't even, because I'll read it out loud sometimes, and think that doesn't even sound like something people would realistically say. Your dialogue in your book seems to be very realistic. Do you take pains to make it sound realistic by reading it out loud or doing it, running it by people to see if this is something that an operator would say?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most of the time, actually, the biggest problem I have is when people speak, they don't speak grammatically correct. And when you're in the military, you certainly don't. I mean, you're shouting things and half sentences and things like that. The biggest problem I have is a copy editor comes back and fixes all that. And so it sounds like some formal English student, you know, just trying to learn English. And so I have to correct it. No, I'm going to say this. I realize it's grammatically incorrect, but this is what he would say.
Do you think readers get that?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I mean, if you read the dialogue, it flows. It's, I mean, people talk, you know, like in Texas, they say fixing. I'm fixing to go do this. You write that in a book, and the copy editor say, there's no such thing as fixing to do something. Well, yes, there is. He's going to say that.
Well, as you have that conversation with your copy editors, you have your background in special forces, and when you've written so many books now that have been so successful, who has the ultimate say in decisions like that? Is that you?
Well, there's the copy editor. I have the ultimate say. He's the copy editor. He or she is just basically looking for mistakes, and they certainly find mistakes in the book. Be it mistakes of setting, where I've called a street name a certain thing and it's actually a different name, or of grammar, or of typos and that kind of stuff. But the editor, my actual editor, we go back and forth, and it's a collaborative process. I've never had a point. Most of the time when she comes back and says something to me, I'll say, yeah, I guess that makes sense. You know, add this segment in here or expand on this. I'll say that makes sense, and I'll do it. Other times when I disagree, and I'll tell her why I disagree. She'll say, I'm going to cut this whole section here. And I'll say, no, I disagree. I think we need to leave it in for these reasons.
We're talking with Brad Taylor about his new Pike Logan thriller, Operator Down. It's available now where your fine books are sold from the good folks at Dutton. It's also available in electronic format. Brad, as you told me that you brought back Aaron and Shoshana because, you know, it was a fan favorite. When you created them, do you have that sense, or do the fans sort of just come to you with this and it kind of surprises you that they were such favorites?
No, actually, when I first created Aaron and Shoshana, in Days of Rage, which was book six, I fully intended to kill them off. They were going to be one-off characters. I brought them in for a specific purpose of the book, and at the end of the book, they were going to be dead. And by the time I got to the end of the book, I liked them too much, and so I didn't kill them. And it turns out what I like is pretty much what the fans like, and they became fan favorites. So I brought them back two books later, not consciously. I just needed a, I had a scene where I had to have somebody doing something, and I said, well, why don't I bring back Aaron and Shoshana? Well, the fans liked it, and so this time I made a conscious decision when I set out to write this book. For the first time, I said, I'm going to bring back Aaron and Shoshana.
When you write these books and put them in different locations, in Africa, Tel Aviv, Israel, wherever you put them, do you take pains to make sure that street names are right or things like that? Or does that matter to you to have the realism there of the actual locations?
Oh, yeah, it definitely matters. And actually, when I get on the ground and do the research, I'm taking most of my pictures when I come back. People think, you know, oh, you get to go all these nice places. I don't ever have a picture of anything that anybody would want to see. It's usually a picture of a street sign, or a picture of a restaurant, a picture of a bathroom even, because I wanted to get as accurate as possible. That's not saying that I don't use artistic license when I need to. For instance, in One Rough Man, I wrote a scene where there was a Four Quarts Irish pub in Washington, D.C., which actually exists, and it's in a strip mall, which actually exists, in Clarendon, which of course is real, on the Clarendon Metro line. But I needed a place for a guy to hide. Well, the strip mall is a completely solid building that goes down the block, and I created an alley. That alley does not exist, so if I need something, I'll use it. But if 99% of the stuff that's in there is in there, it's real. Now, sometimes I'll change names because I don't want to, you know, get sued for saying you did something wrong here. But for the most part, I'd leave it the same.
When you change something like this in the strip mall, you put an alley there, especially with a domestic location like that as opposed to overseas, do your domestic readers say, oh, that alley doesn't exist? And do they demand this exactness in their fiction?
No, not at all. In fact, most of the time, a lot of my readers get a big kick out of Googling this stuff because they can find it if you Google it online. Like an Operator Down, there's a Marijic guest house, which is out in the middle of the mountains. It's a real place, and you Google it. They have a little website, and you can see all about it.
As you've talked to readers over the years, and they've come to love your books, do you find that they are the weapons people, that they're very specific on what you use for weapons?
Yeah, they are. And I don't get too technical. My thought process is if you need to say what the weapon is and say what the weapon is, and sometimes that's necessary. For instance, in one book I had a suppressed Chinese pistol So I detailed exactly what that pistol was, and the reason for that was it's unique to China, and it was a clue to the plot. Other times, if the guy's blazing away and they just need to say pistol, I just say pistol. Sometimes you can bog yourself down with, you know, a Glock 19 suppressed, you know, all this hollow sight, kydex sheath. You get too much stuff in there when you can just say you shot a pistol.
I know you travel all over, like you said, to do research for these books, and you live in South Carolina, right?
I do, in Charleston.
Okay, so as you write, are you generally writing in your home location, or do you write when you're on the road?
Oh, I write everywhere. I can write, that's a good thing about it. I don't have like a, people say, what's on your writing desk? And I say, I don't have a writing desk. I've written in hotels, I've written in, you know, airport bars, I've written in my daughter's gymnastic meets. I can write wherever I am.
So do you have the notebook that if a thought comes to you, you've got to jot it down if you don't happen to have your laptop in front of you, or is it all kind of like your wallet, it's always with you?
Yeah, I've got, well, my laptop's always with me, but I have a journal that I carry right next to the laptop, and that's exactly what you just said. If something comes to mind, I jot it down. And I'll jot anything from like a single paragraph to crafting an entire chapter.
Do you get a lot of advice from people that see you writing at a gymnastics meet or whatever?
No, most of them, you know, most of the time when people see me writing, they think I'm a professor grading papers.
Why is that? Are you dressed a certain way?
No, it's because I've got, what I'll do is write a lot, and then when I need to let my brain think a little bit, I'll print out everything I've written and go back through it, editing it. And so 9 times out of 10, someone will see me marking up a page, and they'll say, "Oh, you're an English teacher, something like that."
I know that if I write something, I proofread it, and it's tough to proofread your own work. How do you develop that skill that you don't have? Your mind doesn't get tricked into what you want to say versus what's actually on the page.
The best thing I do is just let it sit. If I try to proofread something right after I've written it, you don't catch it. But if you wait 2 or 3 days, a week, then you go back and read it, I can usually catch it.
All right. Well, this thriller is just absolutely amazing, just like all of them. It's Brad Taylor's Operator Down. It's the newest Pike Logan thriller, available from Dutton, wherever your fine books are sold. You can get it in e-format or hardcover. Go out and check it out. Brad, thanks for another fantastic thriller to start the year off with, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. And you can check the read the excerpt if they want to at my website, bradtaylorbooks.com.
All right. Go check it out. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Operator, could you help me place this call?